The Doctrine of Brahman, Problems of Morality, and How It Is Overcome. Preserving the tradition of the knowledge of Brahman through its realization by the individual seekers was of paramount concern to the ancient seers and teachers of the Upanishads. But, high as this knowledge was in their esteem, they were far from deluded into believing that bringing it freely within the reach of society at large would better serve their objective or, for that matter, benefit the cause of humanity as such. On the contrary, they had reasons to fear that putting it indiscriminately into the hands of anybody and everybody might prove unsafe for society as well as for the tradition. For extreme dangers lay in letting the doctrine of Brahman fall into the hands of those who were not qualified and did not deserve to receive it. These dangers arose chiefly because the system of knowledge concerning Brahman necessarily bypasses moral distinctions between good and bad, right and wrong. It transcends morality. It stands for a transcendental leap to a point of consciousness where, in fact, all distinctions, empirical or conceptual, vanish. True to their pursuit and faith, the Upanishadic teachers did not shy away from acknowledging that this annulment of distinctions naturally also stretched to the realm of morals. This is truly distinctive of the Upanishadic doctrine of Brahman. It is quite different from what is found among the ancient Greek sages or among the sages of China, where virtue is almost synonymous with knowledge, and vice antithetical to it. Thus, the Brihadaranyaka states that for anyone who has been embraced by the light of the intelligent self, a father is not a father, a mother is not a mother, the world's not worlds, the deities not deities, the Vedas not Vedas. Then a thief is not a thief, a killer not a killer, a pariah not a pariah, an outcast not an outcast, a monk not a monk, an ascetic not an ascetic. He is not followed by good, not followed by sin. Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. Elsewhere it is said, he who knows Brahman, he is not overcome by these two thoughts. For some reason I have done bad, or for some reason I have done good. He overcomes both. And neither what he has done, nor what he has omitted to do, affects him. This eternal greatness of Brahman does not grow bigger by work, nor does it grow smaller. Let man try to find, no, its trace. For having found, known it, he is not sullied by any bad deed. Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. The Chandogya Upanishad makes explicit that good and bad are merely names or verbal distinctions, conceptions based on imperfect, partial knowledge. In the state of perfection, that is, in the light of full knowledge of Brahman, they no longer remain valid. An even more uncompromising declaration to this effect is to be found in the following passage from Kaushitaki. Indra, meaning Atman or the self, is here instructing one Pratardhana about self-knowledge. Know me only, he says. That is what I deem most beneficial for man, that he should know me. I am the one who had annihilated so many wicked ones on earth, and not one hair of me was harmed there. He who knows me thus, by no deed of his life, is his life harmed, not by killing of his mother, not by killing of his father, not by theft, not by destroying a fetus. If he even commits sin, brilliance does not desert his face. Kaushitaki Upanishad. It is difficult to imagine the authors of the Upanishads to have been apologetic about these utterances explicating the concept, or to have felt constrained to defend them. So integral is the transcendence from all distinctions to the doctrine of Brahman. Merging the embodied self with universal self implies karma mukti, or freedom from bondage to karma, where the fruits of action no longer follow or touch one. But in the hands of the fickle or feeble-minded, unable to go through the long and arduous discipline required for achieving this freedom, or in the hands of those who would, willfully or unsuspectingly, disregard this discipline and instead use the doctrine only to gain legitimacy for their own ignorance and wickedness, the teaching of the Upanishads could be a cause of inestimable harm to society and of perversion of the whole doctrine. That the teachers of the Upanishads were alive to these risks is evident from a long story narrated in the Chandogya Upanishad. It describes very vividly how in the hands of Virochana, the Asura chief, the doctrine degenerated into some kind of an egoistical absolutism, whereas Indra, the chief of the Devas, using his faculty of discernment preserved patiently for many long years, finally succeeded in attaining the sublime knowledge. The way to avert the risk, without compromising the purity and wholesomeness of the doctrine, was to restrict its transmission to those who could be trusted to adhere to its truth. This self-imposed restraint is again and again enjoined by the authors of the Upanishads. However, it was this practice of restricting the instruction to those seekers whose eligibility was proven beyond doubt that has earned for the doctrine and the tradition of imparting it the widely circulated epithet of secret, somewhat missing the whole point. How then were the pupils selected? What were the criteria of eligibility? There are several instances in the various Upanishads which describe how the seekers were subjected to severe ordeals by the teachers in order to ascertain their fitness for the knowledge of Brahman. Nachiketa is tested by Yama in the Katha Upanishad. Similarly, Pratardana by Indra, Kaushitaki Upanishad, Janaka by Yajnavalkya, Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, Aruni by Pravahana, Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, Janashruti Pautrayana by Raikva, Chandogya Upanishad, and Brihadrath by Shakayana, Maitrayani Upanishad. The elements nearly always mentioned in the Upanishads as the prerequisites for receiving instruction can be put broadly under two rubrics. 1. The intellectual readiness for absorbing Vedanta, such as indicated by the excellence of learning in various branches of Vedic knowledge, and 2. The mental strength, such as steadfastness and faith, required for following a long regimen of self-control, austerity and continence, and yogic concentration and meditation. Thus, Pippalada, in the Prashna Upanishad, demanded of the 6 aspirants who approached him that they first stayed for a year at his hermitage, practicing austerities and continence, while remaining steadfast in their faith. On the other hand, Gautama, in Chandogya Upanishad, was so satisfied with Satyakama's truthfulness and earnestness that he was at once taken on as a pupil, even though he was without prior Vedic learning. The tests for acceptance of pupils also yielded clues about how to proceed with their instruction. The Upanishads are full of instances showing how the methods of imparting knowledge varied according to the varying needs of the pupils. Thus, Gautama was impressed enough by what he saw in Satyakama to actually leave him on his own to discover the path to knowledge, much against the entreaties of his own wife,